Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from the Syrian-Turkish border is Rafif Joujati, who is the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, the umbrella group of the Syrian opposition. She's a Syrian-American activist who helps organize protests, workshops, and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events in Syria. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rafif Joujati.
Thanks for having me.
And clearly, the Syrian dictator Assad has struck back at the British via an interview that he did with the Sunday Times of London, where he's accused the United Kingdom of being a bullying colonial power. I wasn't aware that the British had a lot of influence anywhere much in the world today, let alone in Syria. But this has led the British Foreign Secretary, William Hague, to label President Bashar al-Assad as being delusional. Is the noose tightening on Assad? Is that why he's appearing to be delusional?
Well, he's been delusional for quite some time. So now he calls Britain a colonial power in today's world. And Mr. Assad fails to recognize the colonial power Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah are exercising over the Syrian people today. I think the noose is tightening around Assad's neck, and we're seeing an increased international response. We're seeing increased international outrage as Mr. Assad chooses to launch Scud missile after Scud missile on civilian populations.
Well, that seems to be his tactic, and you're on the ground there in Turkey, Rafif Joujati. Is this what he's doing, that they're unleashing Scud missiles and air force attacks on areas that the Free Syrian Army control to terrorize the people and spread the message that as long as you're under government control, you're safe, but as soon as you're in rebel territory, you know, if you line up for bread, you could die?
Well, I would argue that the missiles, the Scud missiles, and the indiscriminate shelling are hitting areas whether or not they're under FSA control, whether or not there is an FSA presence. We've seen this in different cities with breadlines. We've seen this at schools. We've seen this in the heart of the capital itself, where there has not been a significant FSA presence. I think Assad is simply targeting civilians because he's trying to send a message across the entire country that he will not tolerate dissent. Here's another example of his delusion. We have been dissenting for 2 years, and violence has not stopped us, and his military solution to crush a popular uprising has not worked, and he keeps escalating, and our people keep going out in protest.
Well, at this point, what's the military situation in terms of a couple of key battles? It seems that the regime is losing this long battle in Aleppo for the police training facility. Is that a key battleground?
From what I understand, the Free Syrian Army has taken over complete control of that police academy. There are other clashes going on even as we speak, and the FSA are seizing control of other police and military academies. We've also gotten word of some different checkpoints around the city of Aleppo where the personnel in their entirety have defected and joined the Free Syrian Army. So I think what we're seeing is a domino effect. As the Free Syrian Army and other armed opposition make more advances across Syria, we're seeing an increased number of defections. And so Assad's military solution is actually simply turning on itself.
Well, apparently the Iranians are saying that Assad will remain in power till 2014. Do you know what their information's based on?
Well, you know, here we are into 2013, and it doesn't look like Assad is going to step down voluntarily. We know certainly he's not going to negotiate a political solution. The Iranians have been supporting Assad from the very beginning and continue to supply him with both cash and weapons. I'm surprised the Iranians didn't say that Assad would remain until 2024. It's fine and well for the Iranians to make claims as they want. Syrian people have spoken, and that's really what matters. And they have said they do not want this dictatorship, and they want Assad not only to step down, but to be prosecuted.
Again, I'm speaking with Rafif Shujati, who's the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, the umbrella group of the Syrian opposition, and she's talking to us from the Syrian-Turkish border. And Secretary Kerry has offered up an additional $60 million in assistance to Syria's political opposition. It doesn't sound like much in terms of how long this agony's been going on and whether it would make any significant difference. But there does appear to be a somewhat perceptible change in attitude from the new Kerry State Department compared to his predecessor, Hillary Clinton. You're a spokesperson for the Syrian opposition. Do you perceive a change here with the new leadership at the State Department?
I don't think the change is caused by a change in leadership. I think Secretary Clinton was really at the forefront of support for the Syrian opposition. I think Secretary Kerry is now seeing a situation where a regime is firing Scud missiles at civilians. And clearly this is an untenable situation for anybody. It's now an international responsibility as this genocide keeps getting perpetuated across Syria. I think the difference now with the increased amount of money is we need increased assistance to take care of the wounded, to take care of the displaced, to retrieve the dead from the rubble. I think this $60 million is on top of other pledges the United States has made. And I think it's very important to note that of all the friends of Syria and the international community, the United States has pledged the most money.
So from your point of view, how is this money dispersed in terms of which group within the umbrella group that you represent, the local coordinating committees? Because obviously, as you know, there's been a lot of concern in this country about the al-Nusra Front, which is a Salafist group who, according to various reports, seem to have quite a lot of influence on the battlefield. And there's a concern that in a post-Assad Syria, the Salafists will be a dominant political force. So the idea that the secular forces who fought against Assad, they'll somehow be shunted aside. People like yourself, in other words, will have no influence in a post-Assad Syria.
Well, if we go back to the beginning of your question, I think the $60 million is going to be allocated presumably to the Assistance Coordination Unit, or the ACU, which is the relief arm of the Syrian Opposition Coalition, which is really the umbrella force of the opposition. In terms of the local coordination committees, I am hoping that Secretary Kerry has allocated some money to continue to support civil disobedience, the establishment of civil society organizations. These are things we continue to do every day in Syria, to continue to strengthen civil work, to continue to offer workshops on things like transitional justice, security sector reform. I mean, we could go on and on. In terms of organizations like the al-Nusra Front, the United States has designated it as a terrorist organization for its alleged ties to al-Qaeda. Certainly, we don't want that in Syria. On the other hand, the reality is that these armed groups are the ones making the most gains against the Assad regime. And in the absence of any foreign military assistance from the Western world, people in Syria have had to do what they've needed to do to put down the dictator. So secular voices like mine and a great many others are continuing to work to establish civil society, to make sure there is a knowledge of civic duty, of democratic principles, and a return to the goals of the revolution, which were freedom, dignity, and democracy for all Syrians. And I think if we continue to work hard, we can be a counterforce.
And at this point, are the al-Nusra Front at the tip of the spear in some of the important battles? My understanding is that is the case with the battle for the airfields in and around Damascus. Is there any other equivalent organization to al-Nusra that is taking the fight to the Assads?
Well, there are several different types of, there are several different organizations within the armed opposition. I think the al-Nusra Front is among the strongest. But I'll tell you what, I've just spent a couple of days with different FSA commands. I found them to be extremely well organized, not so well equipped, but very, very able to use what they do have. They're running a very tight ship in their cities. They are providing social services. They're providing social justice. And they're taking care of business. And so I think as the FSA strengthens, especially as we see more defections from the regime, I think the FSA may emerge as the dominant force.
And Rafif Shoshat,
we have to keep in mind that the Free Syrian Army, from the very beginning, was composed of defected soldiers and volunteer civilians who felt the need to protect themselves.
Again, I'm speaking with Rafif Shoshati, who's the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committee, the umbrella group of the Syrian opposition, and she's speaking to us from the Syrian-Turkish border. Now, there have been some reports. There was an Iranian general that was killed near the Lebanese border. As you know, the Israelis have attacked a couple of convoys of Hezbollah transportation, allegedly of ground-to-air missiles, and there's a great deal of concern about the Assads turning over their chemical weapons to Hezbollah. What's your understanding of where Hezbollah and the Iranians stand within this? Obviously, Iran has made it very clear that they will not allow the Assad regime to fall. There have been no such strong declarations from the West in the opposite direction. But then you get these reports that there are battles going on within the war within Syria between some of the Free Syrian Army units and Hezbollah. Are we going to end up with a war within a war there at some point?
Well, in some ways, perhaps we've already gone there. Hezbollah has been a fighting force inside Syria for many months now. It's not been a secret. I think we were reporting even a year ago that there were thousands of Hezbollah soldiers in Syria, Hezbollah snipers sniping small Syrian children. So Hezbollah has been an active player in the conflict inside Syria. That things are going beyond the immediate Syrian borders is something that Hezbollah needs to be responsible for.
So there's likely to be some blowback, if you will, into Lebanon.
I think there has already been some blowback into Lebanon, and I think you're seeing an increasing number of Lebanese who are extremely frustrated with Hezbollah making military decisions of this nature.
Well, as you know, the Europeans are in a position where they may have to decide soon whether or not Hezbollah is a terrorist organization. There's a trial going on in Cyprus, and there was the recent findings from the Bulgarian government that the Hezbollah was behind the killing of a blowing up of a bus killing Israeli tourists. So will that make a difference, do you think, if the Europeans designate Hezbollah as a terrorist organization?
Well, if they designate Hezbollah as a terrorist organization but fail to take any action, then the designation is almost meaningless. It's the same as the U.S. designating the al-Nusra Front a terrorist organization. If the Western world does not take action to stop things like the genocide in Syria, the designations are irrelevant. Certainly, Assad doesn't care whether or not Hezbollah is designated a terrorist organization.
Well, he's presumably his support for the support both Iran and Hezbollah are getting are for various geostrategic reasons. And one would think that the real wild card here is the extent to which Israel could get involved. And there may be an incentive on the part of both the Iranians, Hezbollah, and the Assads to provoke Israel into some kind of action in order to justify their claims, in the case of the Assads, that this war is about outside interference. Is that, that's something that you have to be concerned about, surely?
Well, certainly we would all be concerned about that, and that would mean that Assad had finally succeeded in internationalizing the conflict even more. But I think what's very, very apparent to everybody, including Assad in all his delusions, is that this is a popular uprising where he had a choice. He could have implemented the reforms he'd been promising for 11 years, or he could choose a security solution. He chose to fire on unarmed protesters, and the revolution progressed from there. So, again, if other parties enter the picture, I think this will mean that Assad has succeeded in internationalizing the problem.
But again, that is the last thing that I would think anybody wants, particularly in terms of your organization, the Syrian Local Coordination Committee. It's already, to some extent, a proxy war, arguably, between the Saudis and the Iranians. But if it gets worse, surely all of your goals get lost, do they not?
Oh, certainly. We are trying to, we would do what we could to stem the role of international players in here, except for the responsibility to protect civilians. Certainly, we don't want any other parties getting involved. And certainly, if Israel were to get involved, that would just be a monumental escalation.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Rafif Shushati.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Rafif Shushati, who is the English language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committee, the umbrella group of the Syrian opposition. She spoke to us from the Syrian-Turkish border. She's a Syrian-American activist, and her organization helps protest, organize workshops and other events designed to empower other activists to take action and inform the public about events in Syria. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.